Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Holly, and I'm an alcoholic. First, I would like to tell the committee that I am very grateful to be here. I'm very happy that you invited me. In fact, my whole group at home is very grateful that I'm here. The other day, when I was getting ready to come down, several of my girls came over to help me pack, and I said, I don't need all that stuff. I'm not going to stay a month. And I heard someone mumble under their breath, oh, that wouldn't be a bad idea. They love me dearly. The thing of it is, I think that quite a few of them took the fifth step with me before they found out that I wasn't senile. Well, I don't intend to spend the whole morning telling you about how drunk I got and how often and how long. I don't think that's necessary. As Shakespeare said, a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. If I'm going to stand here and just tell you how drunk I got, I can very easily take care of that by telling you, well, I drank anything that was too thin to chew before I came in here. But the beautiful part of this program to me is how it starts out. That part of the beautiful journey. You see, there is another book that tells us a story, or a parable rather, of a merchant that found a pearl of great price. And he was so taken in with this pearl that he sold all that he had that he might own it. And then we're also told of a merchant that found a treasure in a field. And he too was so taken in by this treasure that he went out and he bought the whole field. Do you know, years later, there was another book was written that goes hand in hand. And out of all of this came this. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it. So therefore, don't you and I, if we want this pearl of great price, don't we go to any lengths to get it? And I mean to tell you, I went to some great lengths to get it. You know, there's also a story told. Now, I'm not going to preach to you this morning. This is not the gospel according to St. Holly. But there are a few things that I'd like to bring out of point. There is a tale told, a parable rather, not a tale, I beg your pardon. And it reminds me so very much of us in AA, about a sower that goes out to sow some seed. And some of the seed fell by the wayside, and the birds got them. You know, that reminds me so much of the person that comes into our beautiful fellowship, and he's going to rewrite everything, and the birds get him, you know? Or he's either going to convert his whole family, and they get him. And then the sower goes out again, and he sows some seed. They flourish for a very short time because they're sown on stony ground. And they have no depth, and they don't last very long. And that reminds me so very much of the person that says, well, you know, I don't need that spiritual. That's for the birds. I just don't need any of that spiritual. You know, after all, I can make it without that. Well, we were told without God we can do nothing. So to me, when there is no depth, when there is no spiritual depth, we too might flourish for a while, but we don't last too long. Then again, the sower goes out to sow some seed, and this time it falls amongst the thorns and the thistles. And because the little seed is so weak, the thorns and thistles soon crowd him out. And this reminds me of what we are told in the fellowship in our big book. We thought we could hold on to our old ideas, and the results was nil until we let go absolutely. See, those thorns and thistles are out there. Those thorns and thistles are waiting on us to come back out there, because at one time, you know, we were great spenders. You know, we would walk into a place when we had $5 or whatever you have, and we always said, oh, give everybody a drink. Well, those thorns and thistles remember that. And, you know, that's kind of strange, but we would do that, you know. Oh, just set up the whole bar, give everybody a drink. Did you ever go in one of the chain stores and say, hey, oh, give everybody a pound of pork chops? You never did that. And then again, and those thorns and thistles, they're waiting on you, better believe it. Then again, the sower goes out to sow some seed, and this time it falls on very fertile ground, and it begins to grow. I know that this is the truth. My ground was very fertile. It was steeped in manure. So the seed had nowhere to come but up. And as I told you, I will not. I like to always go back to the first time that I heard of this fellowship. I had heard little smitherings about it off and on, but not too much. But the time that I really and truly heard about it, I was home alone on a Saturday night in the kitchen. And I had drank for quite a number of years. But this particular night, I had my bottle of Sweet Lucy. I always thought it was so sophisticated for women to drink wine. You know, that looked very sophisticated. There's nothing more sophisticated than being found with a bottle of Mad Dog, you know. I believed in that. Well, this particular night, a story came on over the radio. And it was called The Glass Clutch. Did I say that right? Glass Clutch? Yeah, I think I did. It was about a woman that had a drinking problem. And it said, if you ever need our help, we'll be the first number in the book. Well, I thought, now, if that woman would just cool it and get some wine, she wouldn't need whatever this is all about, you know, one of those kind of things. But, you know, there was something about that story that stayed on my mind. If any of you have ever read The Hound of Heaven, you will never know exactly what I'm talking about. You see, this story would come back to my mind at different intervals, time after time. Just the words. I didn't know what the glass crutch meant. I can remember walking down the street, and it seemed as if the heel plates on my shoes would beat out the words, the glass crutch. I didn't know. It seemed like the clock at times would say tick-tock. Instead of saying tick-tock, it said the glass crutch. And finally, one day, I was sitting in my living room trying to read, and it looked as if every word on that book or paper or whatever said the glass crutch. And finally, I said, my God, what does this mean? And it dawned on me, Holly Martin, you cannot even read a book or a paper without the glass crutch. I was holding it right there in my hand, you know. But that didn't stop me right then and there, because I felt, I don't need anything like that. I'm doing just fine. But finally, that day came. These words came true. A hopeless, helpless drunk. I never felt that I was anything like a hopeless, helpless drunk. Yeah. I remember in the small community in which I lived, and this will prove my point of being a hopeless, helpless drunk. In the small community, our parish had the first four black nuns ever in the state of Michigan. And I always say we. You know, isn't it funny that alcoholics always, those that never do anything always say we, you know. we should say they. They had built a small schoolhouse, with three-room schoolhouse. And they were going to, the good father had invited all of the visiting dignitary from all over town. We were going to have a great celebration this day to celebrate our nuns and the schoolhouse. Well, of course, you know, I hadn't done anything, but I'm going to go help celebrate. But on the way, I had my little daughter by the hand. By then, I had two children. I had gotten married, you know, like most people do, you know. But, marriage is like vaccinations on me. They didn't take very well. But I did have two children. If I knew then what I know now, you just have the children and keep on going. But that's beside the point. Nevertheless, I got my daughter ready, and she and I were going to the celebration. Have you ever heard the call of the wild goose? That's a strange call. You don't know how to answer it. But it's something there that's telling you, look, don't drink today. I don't know anything about AA other than the story that I'd heard some time ago. But nevertheless, I go up there. When I get to the grounds where this is being held, I went straight to Mother Superior and I said, "Mother, is there anything I can help you do?" And she says, "Child, go and enjoy yourself, and when I need you, I'll send for you." Never tell a practicing alcoholic to go and enjoy himself. You don't do that. So I went back to the caretaker's house, and there he had a bottle of wine. Not the good wine, the kitchen wine, you know. And he was serving all of the adults a little drink out of one of those little insult glasses like that. And I got myself a gratitude glass and had me a nice drink. Now, we all know what that first drink does. Well, this went on and on and on, you know. So they gave out. I went to the store and got them some more of their kitchen wine, and I got some more of my lovely mad dog. And so now I think I'd better go back and ask Mother Superior again if I can't help her. So I, on the way back, one of our good parishioners was making some barbecue, and I thought, now, maybe if I eat something, I won't be, you know, I'm feeling like I may be high, but I don't want to be, so maybe I better eat a little something. So I asked for a piece of barbecue, and he told me to wait my turn or something like that. But anyhow, I just took one of the ribs, and I dipped it down into the barbecue sauce up to there. And one of our good parishioners had the unmitigated nerve to say to me, "Hallie Martin, you can't do that." She shouldn't have said this to me. I am told, and I have come to believe, that I took the rib and I assassinated her. At least I hit her down across the head. Now, I wasn't sorry that she got hit. I was just sorry that I was the one that did it. You know what I mean. I never felt so ashamed in all my life. But do you know, I was always trying to justify. I said, now why should she be upset about this? Samson took the jawbone of an ass and killed a whole army, and she can't stand to be hit by a little pig bone. You know? What's wrong with this woman? You know? But always I tried to justify everything that I ever did in my life, you know? Rationalize it, you know, that this couldn't be this. But I was so ashamed of myself, I did not know what to do. And, when I went home, there was a large picture hanging on my wall of our Divine Lord. I looked at that picture. This is how I come to know that I was a helpless, hopeless drunk. I looked at this picture and I said, "Dear God, if ever again in my life I take a drink, strike me dead." I meant that with all my heart. You don't play with God. Only the parishioners. But thank you. Now, so the next day, the good father sent for me, and I sent two nuns down the street, and they dragged me up the street like a convict. And Father was fresh out of pledges that day. So he said, "Hallie, you and I will have a gentleman's agreement. I want you to promise me that you will never take another drink until you see me take a woman into my house." To this, I readily agreed. You know, we'll agree to anything to get you off my back. Well, nevertheless, on the way home, I stopped and I began to think. Now, you know, I can't hang around here and watch and see what this man's going to do, you know. Maybe I ought to get a six-pack and think it over. So I got myself a six-pack, and when I got in the house, I looked at this picture and I said, "God, I didn't mean beer." And to me, drinking beer was the same as priming a pump. Next thing, so I got some whiskey. I said, "Well, God, I didn't mean whiskey." The next thing you know, I was right back on wine again. And I said, "God, just forget it. Now, this is a helpless, hopeless drunk." But somewhere down the line, and I had heard this story. That's why it is so important where the seeds fall. Somewhere down the line, I had heard this story about the glass crutch. And finally, that day came. When I was sitting in the living room reading, and those words kept coming back to me. "We will be the first number in the book." Well, I went to the book. And do you know, have you ever asked for help and then after you got it, you said, "What in the heck did I do that for?" Well, I did. I called and I asked the lady, I said, she asked me, was I having a problem with my drinking? And I told her, well, a problem with my diet. I might have a problem getting it, but not drinking it. And you know, in those days, people, when they sponsored, you. There was no call ever made, and they said, we'll have someone drop over some rhyme or other. That call was answered immediately. When people sponsored you in those days, they took you hostage, honey. I'm telling you. You know what I mean? They just sponsored you, you know? And, you know, I guess that's why, you know, I have a lot of people to sponsor today, but I'm not a very popular sponsor. They won't go away, but they keep coming back and all that sort of thing because, you know, I have those three, well, I don't call them rules, but suggestions. If you can walk, you will get a job, you know. You know, if you walk, you can get a job. Mm-hmm. That's it. And I won't say you will go to meetings. You must go to meetings. Say, well, there's no match in the big book. You must read the big book. And my last suggestion, if I'm going to, you will leave other women's husbands and boyfriends alone. I tell each and every one of them, there is enough sickies out there in the world for everybody to have one of their own. Okay. Don't get nobody else's. So you see sometimes, you see why they want to pack me up all the time and get rid of me. But then, nevertheless, that was the beginning of my journey into sobriety. This gal came out to see me, and I was scared to death of her, you know, when she kept throwing this who me at me, and she would say, just answer yes to three, dear, and you're in. I thought she must be getting 50 cents a yes or something. Is drinking clouding your reputation? Well, if you've been in a fog over 20 years, you don't know if it's cloudy or not. Do you seek a lower environment while drinking? Why, heavens no, I merely created a lower environment while drinking. And then she asked the dummy, do you prefer to drink alone? If I'm buying it, yes. If you're buying it, no. So then she says to me, oh, I mean, them are some great, you know, I heard a gentleman say the other day about the old gals was tough. They had to be tough, and they brought us up tough. If we didn't bring us up tough, all the guys would have run us off anyway because we weren't supposed to have a drinking problem. You know, we just didn't have good sense to begin with. But nevertheless, we hung in there. And this lovely sponsor of mine, I had two sponsors. And one was very spiritual-minded, and the other one was of a different type, but she was, they kept me, my 2 feet on the ground, one of those kind of things. You went to meetings, you did institutional work. They didn't say, well, now, you know, because we didn't have all these different newfangled things that you got now. You know, now just go out and forget everything. Go out and find yourself. Here you are, you know, they're telling people, go out and find yourself there. And here you got a wife and 5 kids, and you're going out to, well, I'm not going to do anything about this. I can't work right now. I got to go out and find myself. I always say, I hope the sheriff finds you first. You know what I mean? Find yourself. You will find yourself in this program. This is where it is. That's where you will find yourself. And she told me, first, my dear, there must be discipline. For one to become a disciple, there must be discipline. And believe you me, we had discipline. None of us had, shall we say, anything fine at all on the outside. But we had something very splendid on the inside. Because to me, each one of these steps brings me a message. Because these 12 steps are my 12 apostles. You know, they're right there for me. And they remind me so very much of the 12 apostles. When I look at that first step where we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable, I think of the Apostle Peter. You remember about Peter? You remember he was the type of person that was very impulsive. Not only was he impulsive, he was very loud and he was very boisterous and all that sort of thing. And underneath it all, Peter was a coward. Yeah. And because he brings me the message of humility. You see, Our divine Lord said to Peter one time, he says, before the cock crows thrice, you will deny me. And Peter says, oh, no, no, Lord, not me. I will never deny you. See, I can identify with this. How many times did I not say before I found this beautiful way of life, oh, no, 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 I will never take another drink. But like Peter, the time of testing had not come. How am I going to act or react when the time of testing? You see, our divine Lord had told Peter, you will deny me. How many times haven't you and I both said, this is it, I'll never do it again. And oh, we bragged and we were both, and I was boisterous and all of those kind of things. But the time came when I forgot all of that. I put it in the back of my mind. Why did I have to take this drink? Not only because I was addicted, that was one of the reasons, but I have to take it because I don't want you to really, shall we say, know me, that I am a coward. I'm afraid if I don't drink, you'll ridicule me. I got to drink to be accepted. And like poor Peter, see, the time of testing hadn't come. But when the last time that Peter denied, made his denial, he was standing there warming his hands by the fire with the centurion. How many times had I not, before I came into this fellowship, when I walk into a bar and say, I'm not going to drink today, I'm just coming here to see who's in here. Am I not warming my hands by the fire with the centurion when I say good morning to the bartender, you know? Now, if anybody on outside that bar wanted to see me, they know where I live. How many times have I not told that lie? Well, I'm not going to drink. I'm just going to take it home and keep it in case I have company. I didn't go out and buy, shall we say, any decon hoping a rat would come over one day. You know? So in the back of my mind, I knew what I was going to do. And like Peter, time after time, when alcohol would smack me down, time after time, he brings me the message of humility. Not that I will ever, shall we say, become greatly endowed with humility, because then I won't have any. But humble enough to say, look, that little bitty insult glass will whip the living daylights out of me. Yeah. You see, I practice all these other words because you told me not to say any bad words up here. They whips more than that out of me, huh? Yeah. So the idea of ever becoming, like Peter, overconfident, oh, I don't care what happens, I'll never take another drink. But in here, I'm taught just one day at a time. And brother, it really adds up, because it gives me that gift that I will be working on the rest of my life, that beautiful first step. And then again, the second step, where we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity, you know. It brings to my mind an apostle by the name of Thomas. Belief by experience, you know. You know, there are a lot of people that go around and say, well, I don't believe this and I don't believe that. You know, that's attention getters. You know, they want somebody to say, oh, come on now, please believe. You know, that's just an attention. All deep within them, they say, oh, God, don't strike me down this time. You know what I mean? But I got to get these people's attention, you know. And sometimes, you know, when one has a problem or says he or she has a problem with the second step, well, I don't know. I've been asking God to do this for me and do that for me, and nothing ever happens. Well, then, dear, you must accept the divine snub. You know what I mean? You just simply weren't ready for that yet, you know? And then many people might feel, well, you know, I don't need the spiritual. I'm a self-made man. You are screwed up then, you know. I am a self-made. See, self-made and self-knowledge, you know, leads to self-delusion, which leads to self-pity, one of those kind of things. See, Thomas, it said, you know, I simply can't believe our divine Lord rose from dead. He says, you know, I cannot believe this unless I can see the nail prints in his hands. I cannot believe this until I can see the wound in his side. And our divine Lord said to Thomas, Thomas, stretch hither thy hand. You see, when one action is the magic word, when one reaches out, one comes to believe. And when Thomas reached out and he touched the nail prints in his hand, he says, my Lord and my God, he came to believe. If you wanted a taxi, would you go out on the street and just stand there like an idiot? You would have to reach out and stretch forth your hand to stop him. And he wouldn't just ride your finger down the street. He'd ride your whole body down the street, you know. And this is what happened to Thomas. He came to believe his whole body, his whole soul and mind. If you were in one of those elevators, but don't try it on like last night, you wouldn't stand there in front of the elevator and just look at it. Yeah? You'd have to push the button. Then you got to get in, came to believe. You said, well, I don't believe the elevator's going to stop anyway. They ain't letting me push no button. Now, you don't want to go to the top floor. In other words, sometimes we've got to stop and they came to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity. What is sanity? Just plain common sense. Believing in something, in a power greater than yourself. You know, there are many times a person might say, well, you just believe in that chair. This, you know, I'm bigger than that chair, and I'm stronger than that chair, and that chair is man-made. Oh, believe, you know, you go to these places where the table, just believe, just put your faith in that table over there, and you'll come around somebody weighing 300 pounds and sit on the thing and mash it, you know, no. So Thomas came to believe because he stretched forth his hand. See, there was a woman that had an illness for 18 long years. And she had tried everything under the sun, but no relief came. And one day she saw our master in a crowd. And she said, if I can just but touch the hem of his garment. And don't think he didn't know that. And don't think he doesn't know when you are trying to touch the hem of his garment. In all that crowd of people, he said, someone touched me. At any wee prayer that you say, he heard you. You say, but he didn't do anything. You weren't ready for him to do anything yet. You know, they told you in here, easy does it. You know. And then again, we have that beautiful third step where one is given a privilege. Now, this is indeed a privilege. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. A decision. Something that alcohol never permitted you to ever do is to make any decision. You remember the mornings you didn't know which end to put over the commode first and you couldn't make a decision? The decision was made for you. Well, I like to call this step Matthew. You see, Matthew was a tax collector. And people didn't like him. We don't like tax collectors today, you know, not too much. You mention the IRS and everybody gets mad. Well, Matthew, naturally, he didn't like doing what he was doing. He had no friends other than people like himself that were tax collectors. And so, therefore, it made Matthew a rather lonely man. His name wasn't Matthew then, it was Levi. And as he sat by the road one day, you can identify with him. Was there ever times that you associated with people that you really didn't like? But no, because nobody else wouldn't put up with you. And Matthew, or Levi, as his name was at that time, he was afraid to let go of these other people because he was afraid, then I won't have anybody to associate with. You know, there was times that I didn't like certain people until I saw that they had a brown bag when they came down the street or came to my house, so I let them in. If they didn't have a bag, you don't get in, you know, one of those kind of things. So here's that poor Matthew collecting taxes, and he's a lonely man associating only with people like himself. And he didn't like them. And our divine Lord came by one day. And he told Matthew, come follow me. And the book of books tells me that Matthew left and went straightway. He didn't say, well, now, Lord, leave your number. You know, I'll pick up on you later. You know. Matthew was offered a chance. So he made a change. You and I, each and every day, when we look at this third step, we're offered a chance to make a change. How many times in all of my life that I've realized if man doesn't take a stand for something, he will fall for anything. And that's exactly what this third step says to me. Now, I'm not going to stand here this morning and tell you, oh, I just do the third step beautifully. Many times I have to start my day all over again at 4:00 in the afternoon, you know? So I say, uh-oh. Each and every day, God knows these things about me. He knows them about you, and he knows them about me. But the privilege that when I get in bed at night, I can lay down in the bed. I don't have to lay on the floor waiting for the bed to come back around again, you know. Yeah. Say, well, I'll catch it next time. It's there. Because I had the privilege of decision. And that is, shall we say, the lesson or the message that the third step gives me. The privilege of decision. And thank God I can take advantage of that. Now we have the fourth step where one is permitted to make a searching and fearless moral inventory of himself. And I call this step Philip. Because it brings me the message of common sense. We find Philip, like so many times like ourselves, he was living in a little town called Bethesda, and he was very unhappy with this town. Because the people in it were going in all directions, the drunken sailors and whatnot. And Philip was very unhappy, and he says, I got to leave from around here. Yeah. Because he had sense enough to know this. I can't change this town, but I can change me. And then Philip meets our divine Lord. You know, he knew that something could be salvaged, that there was a possibility. And he's noted for the famous words, come see. So when Philip runs into our divine Lord, he remembered a friend of his by the name of Nathaniel, and he told Nathaniel, I think I have found the one. I think I have found the way. Many times, don't you know, we don't want to take a searching and fearless moral inventory because we don't want to find the way. We say, oh, well, there's nothing good there. I just might as well give up. There's nothing. But there is. If we can just remember the words that Philip said to Nathaniel, come and see. You don't know what's in an inventory until you come and see. Searching and fearless. Most of the times we're frightened to death because it's searching and fearless. And you know, you say, well, I've written an inventory. I just love people that write the four steps. And says, I want you to hear my fourth. I said, what are you going to do about one, two, and three? But they told me to write my fourth. Oh, well, wait a minute. Let's get one, two, and three down. First. I believe in first things first. And I feel very much like Philip. Let me take my inventory so I can come and see. Nobody is all bad. We realize that. Now, the fifth step, this is a tough titty, but you need the milk, you know? Admit it to God, ourselves, and another human being. The exact nature of our wrongs. You know, I call it Judas because it brings me, shall we say, the message of self-forgiveness. You know, Judas could not forgive himself for what he had done. Because, like us, many times we hang ourselves by the rope of self-condemnation. Oh, I can't forgive myself for what I've done. But we'll get down on our knees and we'll pray and we'll ask God to forgive us, but we cannot forgive ourselves. You know, in other words, why is it I cannot take the fifth step, admit to God, ourselves, and another human being? Because I am afraid that people might find out that I'm human. And I don't want anybody to know that I'm human, that I can make a mistake. So, you know, I just keep on rationalizing. I must rationalize everything. I still not say any bad words, but I'm going to say one thing. Rationalization is the same as masturbation. You're just screwing yourself, you know. Okay. Committee, forgive me, please. And then we find old Simon the Zealot. I better hurry up here. Then we find Simon the Zealot. You know, he was a person, he brings me the message of faith. Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Simon realized that he had to. One of the important things that he had to do was to stop hurting himself. And then he could stop hurting other people. Yeah. Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Many times, you know, we want to hang on to something. Why would I want to hang on to anything that gives me pain? Does not jealousy give you pain? Does not fear give you pain? If you went to the doctor today or tomorrow and he said, you've got appendicitis, let me take out your appendix. You said, oh, no, don't put your hands on my appendix. Don't touch them. Let them hurt. Well, tell me what pain can hurt worse than jealousy? What pain can hurt worse than fear? You see, I have found that jealousy and pain and self-pity, they're malignant. They go all through my body. And this anxiety that goes along with it is contagious because other people catch your anxiety. So Simon the Zealot realized that I can no longer use the sword. I can only use the faith that I have, the love that I have. Sometimes we feel that, I'm not using the sword. I'm not really and truly hurting anybody. It's just a few things, and I just don't want to get rid of these. If I get rid of these things, then I will lose my identity. Well, what kind of identity have you got? You see, here comes that fool again, In other words, I know I have a bad temper, and I don't want to lose it, then I will lose my identity. And right away, I close my eyes, and I think of a pit bulldog. He's got a bad temper, too. You know what I mean? See? And then we find this lovely little seventh step, one of the shortest, but one of the greatest, and I call it Nathaniel Bartholomew. See, Nathaniel, he was one of those people. He was a sophisticate, very sophisticated, and a skeptic. He's the one to whom Philip had said, come and see. Philip was very skeptical about everything. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. He didn't even now feel that he had very many shortcomings. How could a man like him, who was as educated, have any shortcomings? A lot of short people feel that way, that they don't have any shortcomings. They think they're short enough, But you see, he had to realize one thing. When we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, you say, that's just a little bitty old thing. Remember, the fleas come with the dogs. Remember that. So I got to get those little shortcomings. Those are things that I have to watch out for, because the Book of Books tells me, beware of the little foxes that gnaw at our vineyards, because our vines have tender grapes. And my grapes are so tender that they will ferment at the slightest provocation. I know this. You see, there was Peter. Those little small things. His fears caused his cursing and swearing. Reservation, don't we have it. Well, it can't happen to me, after all. I don't need to worry about that little tiny old seven step, after all. It can't happen to me. Because, you see, I'm different from other people. Alcoholism doesn't run in my family anyway. And really, to tell you the truth, it's traditional that my people drink socially. Well, you break that tradition, You've already broke it, so you might as well tell them about it. They already knew about it anyway, as far as that's concerned. Tradition. After all, that's not on my social level. Well, those people in AA, they couldn't be on my level. Well, you spell level, it spells the same way backwards as it does forward. Level is it. That's it. Those little shortcomings that I think that maybe I am just not quite down to their level yet. Sometimes there's a lot of people whose pilot just isn't lit yet, They feel as if I couldn't be on the level of an alcoholic. I've been called worse than that. And then, there is procrastination. Another one of those little bitty shortcomings. I don't see why that I should start going to AA right now. I don't see why I should start going to Alcoholics Anonymous right now. In other words, I feel that I can go to another place and get other kind of training. And then because, I intend to go and get me I'm going back to school. And I'm going to get me a PhD. And I said, stop it, Hourly. I beat you to it. I got one. Oh, you have? Yes, piled up hell and damnation. I've had it for years, I assume. But it's the one that I've really had for a long time. Those shortcomings, those little bitty things that I much watch out for, that hang on the line. Okay. Now we look at steps 8 and 9. And that has to do, my friends, with amends. And I call these steps James and John. John was known, the Apostle John was known for his love, and his deep love of his fellow man, and so was James. In other words, see, these two steps, 8 and 9, it has so much to do with forgiveness. And oh, how many times have I not misused these steps? How many times before I learned how to live have I not crawled on my belly practically asking you to forgive me? Why? Because in forgiveness, sometimes when we go to a person and ask them for their forgiveness, you know, we're hoping that they will share some of their shortcomings with you. Then when I listen to this, now I'm begging you to forgive me, you know. But, you know, sometimes a person will say, well, don't worry too much, you know, sure, I forgive you. But I have to also realize that I'm a human being and I have done thus and so forth. I'm waiting to hear what you're going to say, because whatever you say, I'm going to keep that in escrow. So in case I decide to do this again, I said, but you remember you said such and such a thing. How many times don't we hear words that someone else has said and we keep it in escrow so I can wash your face with it again? And you call that forgiveness? Remember something that happened way back in 1777? So I can tell you about it again, and I call that forgiveness. Yeah. You know, sometimes people are always making jokes about Al-Anon. I got some very good Al-Anon friends, you know, about the things that, how they get even and all. They believe, you know, an Al-Anon to me, they're just an alcoholic turned wrong side outwards, that's all. You know, that's what I believe. And the only thing, the difference between Al-Anon women and alcoholic women is that Al-Anon women, they detach with love. Alcoholic women detach with a 38. That's the only difference. Same thing right on, you know. If there must be a detachment made, we're ready to do that, you know. But, you know, when it comes down to making amends, what am I really expecting? Do I want condescension? You know, many times if I've done something wrong, then to make amends, I got to come first and tell you, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And you owe a man a whole lot of money, and you come, well, you know, I want you to know I'm an alcoholic. He don't care what you are. He wants his money. You know, I got to tell him I'm an alcoholic. You still owe him, so pay him. So what am I looking for, condescension or respect? And that's what I want, is respect, you know. Don't make it easy for me because I'm an alcoholic. So what? He may be one too, so you know he wants his money. So here we are. In other words, my friends, I have to be very, very frank about this thing of using my condition. Well, you know, after all, I want you to think of it like this. You know, my alcoholism, sure, my alcoholism caused a lot of problems. But you know, in inventory and in reading my big book, it tells me that drinking was just a symptom of what was really wrong with me. Some of these things was wrong with me anyway. Now, but I'm going to blame it on alcohol. You see, it's just like when we talked about our little boy, Judas, that fifth step. See, there sat Judas. Something was wrong with Judas anyway. And then the book of books tells me, and then Satan entered into Judas. Have you ever been full of hell and everything else, and then you took that drink, and then you did raise hell? That's what happens many times. It was already there, but all you needed was an advocate, alcohol. And then many times, you know, we are afraid of amends. We're afraid to make amends. Why? Again, we don't want people to know that we are human beings. Because if I am a human being, I'm just like you. And, you know, I want you to look upon me as a superior person that wears a halo. And halos are things that will slip down around your neck and choke the living what out of you, you know. In other words, now we look at the 10th step where we continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And I call this step Judadius, because he brings me the message of steadfastness. His name was Jude, and we know what Judas did. With a man by the name of Jude, you think he would have changed it? Oh, no. But he was steadfast. In other words, he might have quit on the count of his name, but he didn't. Many times we in the program, we get a little upset. And because of what someone else has done. Oh, well, you know, I heard that so-and-so did something, such and such a thing. And I don't want to be in that group, or I don't want to be with those people. Because, you know, he is just ruining the program. He may be ruining his program, but he isn't ruining my program. I must remain steadfast regardless. So I don't want to be counted in with those people. I drank with those people. I can be counted in with them. The main thing of it is, you know, anything that's bad, you see it in the paper. If John Doe goes out and shoots his wife, they put that in the paper. John Doe shot his wife and kids this morning. But if John Doe kissed his wife and kids this morning and went off to work, you don't see that in the paper, do you? So you only see all the bad things anyway. But the thing for me to do is to remain steadfast. And then here comes our beautiful 11th step. Now we're going to deviate again a little bit with this 11th step because I call it Luke, where one sought through prayer and meditation to improve his conscious contact, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Luke wrote his epistle. But Luke did not walk with our divine Lord. But the reason why I call it Luke is for the simple reason is Luke was a physician. And since he did not walk with our divine Lord, in order to be able to write the book of Luke, he had to go right to the source. And this is what the 11th step does for me. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact. If it isn't through prayer and meditation, if that isn't going right to the source, I would like to know exactly what it is. And that is what this physician did. And being a physician, he couldn't speculate on it. He wanted the truth. And that's what you and I find in the 11th step. You see, in the 11th step, I realize that I am always, shall we say, in the recovery room of AA. You see, I have had one of the greatest operations that's ever been given to mankind. You know. There's no physician on the face of this earth that could give me a personality operation. And I will constantly be in the recovery room all of my life. And when one has had this type of operation, there's someone there. When you've had any kind of operation, there's always a nurse there taking your four vital signs, you know, your respiration and all of those other kind of things all the time. Being in the recovery room, I must constantly take my vital signs, pride, fear, resentment, and self-pity. Because as long as I live, I will be in the recovery room. I will never recover. I will be right there. Because pride, fear, resentment, and self-pity will always plague me from time to time. But all I have to do is to call on the physician myself. And I am made whole again until I decide to tear it up again. A conscious contact. What else? You see, when one would want a conscious contact, if you were going to send someone a Valentine or a birthday card, would you not go and look in a store where the cards were and you would read and read until you found a card that reminded you of the person? You read, oh, no, that don't remind me of Paul or Sarah or Mary. But, oh, this is the card that reminds me so much. Let's send this one. Why? Because you want a conscious contact with that person. So each and every day I ask, Lord, here I am. What do you want me to do today? Conscious contact. It is so very important. And as long as I stay in the recovery room, I will have that conscious contact. And then we have our 12th step, and I call it Andrew. You know, Andrew was one of the first disciples, having had a spiritual experience. As a result, you see, you can tell I'm old-fashioned, having had a spiritual experience as a result. Well, you got to wake up before you can experience anything anyway. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps. You see, Andrew was one of those very, very busy people. He was always right there. You see, Andrew carried the first message. Andrew did not write any books. There are no books in the book of books called Andrew. But Andrew was well remembered. Andrew made the first 12 step when he went and got his brother Peter. But you know who Andrew brought first? Andrew brought Andrew. And sometimes we get so busy going out getting somebody else, you forget about bringing yourself. First things first, you know. You know, in other words, we realize that not all of us can be fishers of men. But all of us can be keepers of the aquarium, you better believe it. There's something that you can do. You know, sometimes you may think, well,
I wouldn't want to venture out that way. I don't know exactly what to do.
Noah didn't know what to do either. But God told him when it come down to build the ark, what kind of wood to use. You told him you go get some gopher wood, you know, whatever that is. Yeah. But Noah had sense enough to follow directions. And that's what you and I have to do, is to follow directions. And you might say, well, you know, after all, I think I need something else other than that. Go ahead on and get it, but this is basic. You know, because after all, if I go to school, I think you've been sober about 15 minutes now. So I think I'll go to school because I want to be a counselor. Oh, Lord, have mercy. And, you know, I really need this. I really need the degree. Why, Holly, don't you have a degree? I said, no, I don't even own a thermometer. No, I don't have any degree. How much of a PhD do I need to tell a person that there is a solution? How much? Now, these things are good. I'm not saying anything about it. I think education is marvelous. But in order to do the things that I must do, I didn't say can do, but must do. Do I need an MSW? Is it necessary that I have an MSW to tell a person that God could and would if he were sought? How much of that do I need? I don't need a lot. That comes, my friends, from the heart. And we speak, my friends, of the beautiful promises. And goodness knows they are beautiful things. But these promises, like every step, were given to us many years ago. These promises, as beautifully as they are written, for those of us that have come to believe, they were summed up many years ago when you and I give the best that we have. Those promises are fulfilled in the words in Joel 2:25, and I will restore unto you the years that the locusts have eaten. God bless you.